If needlework is your passion, whether you're stitching by hand, machine, or mixing it all up, you're going to want to hear about the Mr. X Stitch Contemporary Needlework Prize 2025. This prize celebrates the best in modern stitch and it's open to creatives from all around the world, whether you're a student or an emerging artist or a seasoned professional. And the best part, you don't have to send your work anywhere. Just upload high-resolution images to a private folder we will send you after you enter. You can enter more than one category, for instance, hand embroidery and 3D textiles. Just grab an entry for each one. And if you've got a student ID, you can get 50% off the entry price as well. The deadline for entering is 30th of June 2025, and entries are now open at xstitchmag.com/prize-entry. Thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Bookmarked Hub by Search Press and David and Charles, and the legends at Lowry Workstands. If you've got the stitch bug, this is your time. Show us what you've got. Enter the prize now. Visit xstitchmag.com/prize-entry to get your ticket today. Per Fager is a Swedish needlepoint artist who recreates video games from the 1980s and 1990s in large-scale needlepoint works. Per's work is fantastic. There's been such a tradition of video game cross-stitch, video game needlepoint, the way these two pixelated art forms have intersected. And Per's work is something that seems to have elevated beyond the sort of amateur craft scene. At the moment, he has an exhibition called Soft Pixels 2, which is running until the 7th of April. We talk about that. There's a link to in the show notes to that particular show. But it was great to talk to Per because he sat inside this gallery where all his work was displayed, and we talked about how his passion for pixel art began as a child, and how the evolution and the way that he has become a needlepoint artist has been something that seems to have just been reinforced by destiny, quite frankly. Per's a very engaging artist. He's a self-confessed nerd. And yet his passion for the tradition of video games and for the tradition of needlepoint is incredibly strong. I will be back next week with a second part of his interview, but I'm sure you'll enjoy talking to him. And if you do enjoy the show, it would be fantastic if you're able to share it with somebody else who likes this kind of thing. So for now, here's Per Fager, and I'll see you next time. Enjoy the show. So here you are then, sitting in a gallery of your work. Soft Pixels runs from the 3rd of February to the 7th of April 2024.
Yes. Yes.
Tell me about the show.
So this show, so I'm sitting in Gävle Konstcentrum, and Gävle is a city 1.5 hours north of Stockholm. So, and they have this, it's a museum or art place. So this exhibition was previously in another city of Sweden, and after this it will move on to yet another city. So it's like a touring exhibition. So what we did for this show was that we used the works from the previous exhibition, and then we added some other works from previous works I've done previously. So it's a mix. And we also painted the room. It's completely crazy. So now this is the gray part, but then it's you can see there's some pink over there.
Oh, yeah.
And there's purple. Yeah. It's completely crazy.
That's amazing. You know, you've arrived when an art gallery lets you paint the walls. You know you're doing all
right. Oh, yes. I think when the sort of imagery I do, it will always be kind of, it's not going to be clean and balanced. It's always going to be too much because of the coloring and the way these video game images are. So we might as well go all the way and do something completely crazy to kind of create this atmosphere.
Yeah, I love it. I love that there's a playfulness, because if there's one thing I've observed about you, it's just that playfulness is your thing.
Yeah, cool. Thank you for noticing that. I realized quite early, I studied fashion in Stockholm, and I realized really early that being into cool fashion was not me. So I started working with kidswear, and then after that I worked as a graphic designer for Lego in Denmark. So that kind of suited me, my playful spirit. Yeah. Maybe not as a person, but, you know, what I want to do.
Yeah, yeah. And you're still doing designs now, aren't you? You're like a sort of pre-designer.
Yeah, on and off. So right now I'm privileged to be working with the Needleworks full-time.
Right.
I've been doing that before for 3 years. Drove me crazy. So I need to kind of alternate and do something else in between. But I love to stitch.
I admire the fact that you've got a gallery show and that you're not furiously making things for it, like in the weeks leading up to it or anything like that. I love the fact that you've gone. I was wondering whether you were just like last minute, like, oh my God, I had this idea for a piece. I'm going to like.
Oh, no. I'm not like that at all. And I'm really structured when I work. And also because this is so time consuming, of course, you know this, and the people watching this obviously understand that. So there's not really room for improvisation for me. So I have a plan, I stick to it, and then I make these little kits for myself. And then it's just a matter of grinding it through and getting it done. So these big pieces, that's like 300-400 hours to complete. But I am quite fast now because I've been doing this for so long time. So you get more efficient.
You do.
Luckily.
So
yes.
Imagine somebody's never encountered your work before. Please give me like the official, this is what my work about storyline.
So what I do is I make these needlepoint works based off of video game pixel graphics. And these video games are from the 80s and 90s, mostly. So it's a lot about nostalgia, and also these characters and these worlds that bring me so much happiness in my life, and also has been a source of inspiration for me. So I want to share that. And at the same time, I've always had a textile interest since I was a kid. So that has been with me also. So it's two interests fusing
together. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I read a story that said that when you were a kid, you would copy pixelated images off the telly.
Yes. Oh, you read that. Okay. Yeah, yeah. That's awesome. That's exactly what I did. So I spent my nose was touching the TV. And I think that's around that time that I need to get glasses.
Right. Yeah.
Probably. So that happened quickly. No, but I drew these on graph paper. These pixel characters. So there was something about that grid that fascinated me. And also in Swedish school, we have textile class. Right. I know that's pretty unique for Sweden. I was being taught different stitches, and there was something about stitching on this, you know, like even weave cloth. Mm-hmm. That's also a grid. So there's something about grids and systems that attract me. And it's an interesting correlation that it exists both in these pixel images and also in needlepoint.
And you were actually a really early adopter of this idea, because now it's kind of quite a known thing, isn't it?
Yeah. A lot of people do it. What I would argue is that my works are the biggest in the world in cross stitch. No one else does this in this scale. So that's kind of my little bubble where I operate. Yeah. But it's so great to see people making these connections, and also people reaching out to me. I'm not saying I was the first one, but it means a lot to hear, like, from young kids saying that they've seen this and they wanted to try it, and that became their entry into needleworks. So of course you have also influenced a lot of people, so, you know, it's really, that means the world.
Yeah.
It really does.
Did you take part in the Sprite Stitch forums when they were a thing?
No, I think I saw a bit of it. I think a long time ago, I even sent them some pictures, but they didn't respond.
Right, yeah.
So I don't know. I have no idea. What I tend to do when I work creatively is I tend not to look at works that are too similar to what I do. To me, it's a better creative environment, not knowing what other people do. So I want to be in my own bubble as much as possible.
Yeah. It's just funny because it's like that was a little zeitgeisty moment there for that overlap really strongly. And it was a shame that that forum didn't really last. But I know that, like, Lord Liberdan, you know, he was heavily involved in that. John, who did Star Wars cross stitch. Like they had that thing. And what's fascinating to me then is that's come and gone. And while like you say, people are still doing video game cross stitch now. You're here, and now you're kind of like you're the man.
Yeah, I don't know. What I do know is I will never stop doing this. I will always do this. So even though if I don't do it full time, I will never, ever stop. And the good thing is that this whole hobby, as we all know, it's something that we usually associate with older people doing it.
Mm.
So the older I get, the more correct it is for me to be sitting with this, right? So I'm growing into it.
Yeah.
So it's really, it's a cool journey to be on.
The thing that I also find interesting now is that it's much more nostalgic, you know, because they don't really make games like this anymore. I mean, maybe they still do, but they're kind of retro inspired.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's almost like you're now documenting a slice of history, aren't you?
In some way, yes. But the thing is that video gaming, just like movies and music, is just so much. So I work with my games, and that's, you know, one little part of it. But then there's like an infinite amount of other games that doesn't mean that much to me. So that's why I don't do those games. But they mean a lot to other people. So in that sense, you know, it's possible to do this and do this many works with completely different games because there's so much reference. So I operate in my bubble, and it tends to be the cute characters. That's what I like. And also color, of course. So
that's the thing, isn't it? Is you're now curating your part of the video game sphere because you're just choosing the stories and the moments that have meaning to you.
Yes, exactly. So that's really the foundation. So people sometimes ask me, do you want to do like a commission work? And I tried it one time and I just wanted to try it. But that was a game I didn't know about. And it didn't do anything for me. So I just became like a stitching machine. That was not very, you know, it was fine. But I don't know. I'm privileged to be able to choose my own motifs. So, of course, that's what I'm going to continue to do as long as possible. But if I'm, you know, if I'm outright poor and have nothing left, then maybe I can stitch for money. Maybe that's something for you as well.
When it all goes south,
we're going to stitch for money.
We'll just be a couple of old duffers sat on a bench in like Brussels or something. Like, you want a piece of wood?
Yeah, so that's my backup plan in life, I guess.
What? So you did your first piece in 2008.
Yeah.
This is what you've said. How?
Yes.
So how did you come to get to that point? What was it? Where was the? Did you do like small pieces just for your own personal, or did you go just going to go big straight away?
I wanted to go big straight away, and this was when I was studying. So I studied, as I said, fashion on Beckmans College of Design in Stockholm. It's like St. Martin's, but in Sweden in a way. So that was really cool, amazing experience. But when you study, it kind of takes up your whole life. So you do it around the clock. So I wanted to do something for myself in that period of time. And then I had this idea that I wanted to do cross-stitch work from a video game. And I wanted to do something big.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I know I wanted to do. And then I started this project. It was a background from a video game. So I removed all the characters. And it was just like a horizon with clouds. So it's basically like a natural scenery. If you don't know it, you don't know it's a game. But that's what I wanted to do. So I started that, and then that took 2 years because I went on and off, and I didn't know why I was doing it. But I knew I wanted to complete it, right? So as soon as that was finished, there was new other games I wanted to do, and there was other techniques I wanted to explore. So like many people, I started off with like strands of cotton, but then I wanted to move on to wool. So wool is what I work with now almost entirely. And also both cross stitch, but also like long stitch and different techniques that you can do with that yarn. So I made a couple of works. And at that time, I bought my yarn in a shop in Stockholm where I lived at the time. And I became friends with the owner because I spent a lot of time there. A lot of us do that, I think. you know, you go there, you order yarn, and, you know, you talk about what you do. So she said, "Did you want to exhibit these works in my window?" And I was like, "No, that's embarrassing. Why would I do that? Why would I share this nerdy hobby?" But I did it anyway. People encouraged me. And then after a couple of days, she said, "There's someone who wants to talk to you." And that was a gallerist who passed that shop every day on the way to work.
Wow.
And he could see something in what I did. So that was a fluke. And I'm glad I took that tiny opportunity to show my works in that window. So that's where that's what I always tell people. You never know what opportunities will lead to something. So to me, that was the beginning of a more than 10-year-long collaboration. And that's what led me here to be able to have a museum exhibition with my works. And I know this is so specific what I do that this is really a privilege.
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing quite like the universe going, "Come on, son," and you like bumping into someone who had a gallery within like six months of putting yourself out there.
That's amazing. Like a story. It's like a fairy tale.
It is. The thing I love, so I'm going to butcher this, Saiken Densetsu 3,
yeah, that's the first one.
2009.
Yes.
The thing I love about it, as you said, is you didn't put the characters in it. So you just kind of did this landscape that could have kind of been anywhere. Yeah. And in a way, yes. I think that's kind of genius.
Yeah. Why something else.
Yeah. Why did you choose to take the characters out?
I don't know. That was just the first idea. And I wanted to do the background. I don't know. I have no idea why I did that. The backgrounds in that game are gorgeous, of course. The game came out pretty late in the life cycle, so they could really optimize and do a lot with the hardware. So the game looks absolutely gorgeous. So I guess I wanted to do the background, but I don't have a good explanation. It's just, I don't know. And I've done that on another series that we showed in New York on the art fair, Volta Art Fair. And then I did more backgrounds from games. But the challenge then was to make people understand what this is. So I kind of realized that I did this backwards. So I should have started with these really, you know, you see it's a game.
Yeah.
So it's easy to understand. And then I can remove objects and do the background. So.
No, but I think that's the smarts. Yeah, like the Mega Man one you did, which is just basically a collection of brown clouds with a sort of horizon in the middle.
Yes.
And it's,
you like that one, yeah? Cool.
Yeah, but what I love, and so I did an interview a little while ago with Manya Goldman, and she's a needlepoint artist, and she does portraits, you know, they're sort of to do with photographs and stuff. But there's one piece in particular called Sliding, and about half of the entire piece is just background, and it's just this single color, and she's deliberately done that because that's the way she wants to frame it. And I think that's fascinating, and that's why those pieces are fascinating to me, because you've gone backgrounds, and you know, there's a lot to be said for it, because obviously there's people who make the video games who put all this effort into the backgrounds, and we don't see them because we're too busy looking at the little pixels punching each other in the face, and that's the homage. But at the same time, I think it just takes a lot of nerve to just go and do backgrounds because of the sheer workload it takes to do them. Like that Mega Man thing would have driven most people nuts, I think, because it's just deep browns all day long.
Yeah, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
What is it?
Kind of crazy fool does that.
Yeah.
I mean, what was it like to make those pieces?
I really, really enjoyed it. And to me also, I'm not an art student. I'm a designer student. So I don't really have that artist background like most people do in the art world. So, but I have a little bit of knowledge about art, and I really, really appreciate the Romantic period when they did these landscapes and kind of kitschy, mundane, everyday scenes that sometimes can be perceived as like kitschy art, but I really, really, really like it. And it was all about the drama of nature and horizons and clouds and all of that. So doing these backgrounds was inspired by that art movement. And especially the one you talk about, Mega Man, it's really these dramatic dark clouds that's so iconic for the Romantic period of painting. So I felt like I was being a part of history in a way.
Yeah.
So no. That was really, I really enjoyed that.
Because that's the thing, you have those pastoral scenes, don't you? And you see, I don't know, the English countryside and, ooh, a watermill and all those kind of things. And then you do. I mean, my video game, like, history is kind of diverse, I suppose. It's petered out now. But I did complete Final Fantasy VII after 150 hours or whatever. And I know that one's a corker, you know. And I think that's the thing, is you suddenly realise that there's so much love put into the work, and some of it is so, you know, whether it's the architecture of a building or the design of a piece of transport or the way they made an animal, that you kind of gloss over it after a while because you're playing the game. But as you find with needlework, when it's used to capture any kind of moment, the reframing of it in a needlework context stops and makes people think about it a lot more.
Exactly. So it's been, to me, video games has meant a lot, as I said in the beginning. So one part of this project is to make this visible, these little details. So what I do, I know I take these frames out of context, but these frames, just like you say, they flicker by in an instant and then they are gone forever. So in a way, when you play the game, obviously. So what I do is I take this freeze frame and then I make it permanent in the most horrible way possible. But that's, you know, I'm setting it in stone in a way by doing these stitches, because once you've done it, it's there forever. You can't deny it. So it's permanence, as video game, opposed to video games that are transient medium. So it just flickers by. So this is really the core of what I do. So you hit the nail on the head there, Jamie. Yes.
Thank you. They're also, in the same way as the Bayeux Tapestry and some of these tapestries serve as historical reminders, you know, we live in a world that's so dependent on electricity. If we break it and there's no more electricity, there's no more video games. But thankfully, we'd still have your needle points to remind us of what the thing looked like, you know?
Yes, exactly.
It's a very depressing view. But so
it's the cave paintings of video games.
Yeah, there you go.
The people will be gone, but the needleworks will be there as a reminder.
Yeah.
So I want to, you know, when I played video games as a kid, and still it's, even though it's widespread today, it's still a bit of a niche interest in a way, because either you know it or you have no relation to it whatsoever. It's not like, oh, I play once in a while. Either you know it or you don't. That's my experience of it. So I want to kind of flip that around and show how much this has meant to me, that this has a lot of meaning, a lot of depth, and this is also a culture that I'm representing by doing this. And the same goes for the needlework as well, because either you know it or you don't. You know, when I have kids coming to my shows, a lot of them, you know, they never picked up a needle and a thread. So I think it's really, I want to share that aspect of it as well. Because I think crafting is important. It's more important than ever to use your hands. I think it's really, we need that balance.
And it's kind of funny because actually when you play video games, you know, like after I'd played Final Fantasy and I finished it, and then afterwards I was like, hooray, and then the credits came up and I sort of looked around at the world and realized not a lot had changed. But I'd literally also just spent 150 hours kind of wiggling my thumbs.
So
in a way, like,
it's also craft. You're crafting. Yeah.
But there's something to be said for then saying to people, you know, why don't you use the rest of your hands? Why don't you get into something that's a bit more of a physical creative process? Not to kind of undervalue the things, but I would hope that you kind of inspire people in both directions. It's all right to do the video games, and it's all right to have a go at needlework.
Exactly. And both of them are tactile. So it's about tactility, touch. So they have a lot in common, and that's really fascinating, and that's really what drives me in this process as well.
When you started doing, so you started out with Seiken, then Setsu 3. Was that like when this idea came out, you were like 100% that's the first game I'm going to do? Do you have a list of games in your mind that you're working through?
Yes. And the good thing is, because I spent so much time making these needle works, I have a lot of time to think. So once I'm done, it's like floodgates with new ideas that accumulated through all these hours of stitching. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that's the wash, rinse and repeat cycle of my creative process. And it suits me in a way. And when comparing to working as a designer for a company, there is a lot, there's a long process of decision making. And then there's a short process of actually doing these things and doing the job and drawing these characters or whatever you do. Whereas in this, it's opposite. So the creative process, choosing the images, is really short, short and sweet. And then it's this massive production process afterwards. So it's like complete opposite.
But do you, so like, do you have a really, do you have like a photographic memory or something? I'm just wondering, like, when it comes to choosing the piece. So for instance, one of yours I really like is like Master Blaster, because you've got a guy with his car.
Yeah, the ending. Looking at, yes.
Yeah. Now, does this mean that to do it, to make the design now, you have to play the entire game and get to the end? Or, I don't know, how do you do it?
You can, yeah, some games I do that. It depends on how much time I have. Right. So all these images are readily available, of course, today with the internet. When I grew up, we didn't have that. So then you had to take photos of the TV, I guess. It was not at all as it is today. So some games I play, some games I extract what I need from them because, you know, I know I did one piece where I actually had to play for quite a long time to reach that. It's the one with, it's also Seiken Densetsu 3, but it's with a big pumpkin. And that was stressful because I didn't really have time. And that's a shame because I love to play games, but you know, I don't have that much time anymore. So that was a weird feeling. I don't have time to play games because I'm stitching these games.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Takes up a lot of time.
Yeah, again, one of those ones where here's my hobby. I've turned it into something resembling a business. It's not my hobby anymore.
Yeah, I turned it into a monster. Yeah, exactly. But I have, when I start off, I have these images in my head. So everything kind of stems from nostalgia, of course.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, nostalgia can be deceitful. So sometimes these old games that I haven't played for a while, they are as I remember them, but sometimes it's completely opposite. And I was like, what was this? How did I remember it like that? You know, so then I have to rethink the process. And it's a fun thing because I know there's a game now, like a retro game. I think it was Shovel Knight or something. And the developer said that we're not doing this as an 8-bit game. We're doing this as you remember the 80-bit games, right?
Yeah.
So, and that kind of, it's similar to that. So that was fun to hear because it's really all about that. The difference is I can't change these images, so I need to just rethink.
Yeah, and then do you, I mean, for instance, if you choose a game like Trip World or something, do you have an image in mind or do you go, I like that game, and then you see to image, find what images you can find?
Oh yeah, and that game specifically has so much different scenes. So I've done like 7 works from it because it's just so much to pick because the game is so diverse and varied, the locations, the characters. So that's a unique game because otherwise usually it's more or less the same. But Trip World, as you can see behind me, there's a lot of cute scenes. And even though I've done a lot, there's still more to do.
Right.
So sometimes I revisit games, but of course I want to do new things and surprise as well.
Now, I noticed, spinning back through your Instagram, that in 2020, you did an awful lot of monochrome. Like, there was a lot of black and white and grey stitching, and I wondered whether that was deliberate or whether that was circumstantial.
I don't know. I was depressed, probably. I don't know. 2020, when was that?
That was like the COVID year, you know, so...
Ah, COVID year. I don't remember. I did... I don't remember what I did back then. Because I did the big ones.
Right.
I did these. And then I did a lot of Game Boy stuff. Yeah. And then after that, for now, I've been working a lot with 8-bit. So that's been kind of monochrome as well. Oh, and I did the other one, the early NES games.
Right.
Maybe that's the one with the black backgrounds?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I've done 8-bit for a long time now. So now what I'm working on now currently is more complex work. And I really enjoy that, to have a lot of different colors and a lot of yarn and opposed to these clean images.
Yeah, it just made me wonder. It was just like, there's like on your gallery, on your website, there's just like about 9 or 10 of them in a row. And it is kind of like, yeah, a lot of them being Trip World, quite frankly. Is Trip World a black and white game, or is that?
It's from Game Boy, so it was like an LCD screen, so it's actually like greenish.
Yeah.
But I just made a decision to make them grayscale because it looks better.
Yeah. I just thought you were sort of like, and I mean, and that's the thing. Do you have several pieces on the go at once? Are you able to like switch it out if you get a bit bored of doing a certain color or something?
Yeah, usually. So usually I have a studio, of course, to work in, because these big works, I can't really do it at home. Mm. But usually I work in the studio and I work from home. So I alternate between two works at the same time. And that really takes the load off one single project. So to me, that has been a benefit. Mm. And also, as you say, when I grow tired of one, I just switch to the other. So, but the good thing now, because I've been doing this for so many years, I know that I will finish it. In the beginning, you know, I was shaking. What have I started?
Yeah.
Will this ever end? But now I know I will get through it, and I can get through anything. So the only limitations are in my mind. Because I know I'm able to finish it, and I will go through this process.
You come across to me as somebody who is very measured, someone who knows their plan. I mean, are you able to go, I know I can do roughly this many stitches in a day, and that's fairly consistent, so you can project manage in that kind of way?
In a way, yes. And I have to do that now, because this exhibition here, I was invited a couple of years ago to the first museum that did this. And then I had a year to work. And I knew I wanted to do all new works. So I didn't want to borrow in old works. I wanted to do something new and cohesive as mm-hmm. well. So that's where I laid out the plan and tried to figure out how much can I manage in a year. So I made like 24 pieces, I think, in a year. And that was full time. Mm. So it's 8 hours a day, minimum stitching for a year.
Big old stitches as well.
Yeah. So that's kind of when I started time management for real, because I have to take that in account. I can't ignore it. I can't just do this when I feel like it. It's a job. Mm-hmm. Because the main thing is to get as many pictures out of my system as possible. Because I want to share as much as possible.
When I did a talk with the Royal School of Needlework a few years back, and you've got these first year degree students, and I was trying to impress upon them the importance of like stretching and how and I just wondered, like, so for someone who spends 8 hours a day stitching, what are your pro tips to avoid, like, I don't know, crippling yourself or going insane?
To me, I want to sit comfortably. So what I do, I have this, you know, a scroll frame. Mm-hmm. So it's two round bars, and then I roll it up. Mm-hmm. And then I sit on a sofa with my knees up. And then I have this like on my knees. And I stitch like this, one hand above and one hand underneath. And many people ask me, is your body broken? Is your hands crippled? But I had more issues with my body when I was working in an office by the computer all day,
right,
than I have now. So, but you should sit comfortably. You should not, you know, strain yourself. And also, to me, sometimes I've done works where you hold it in the hand and go like this. Mm-hmm. Then I had cramps. So yeah. I can't do that, because when the works are this vast, it's just too much time to kind of grab the fabric like this.
Have you ever...
And in regards to stretching, you mean mounting it?
No. I mean, like, literally, like, just getting up and, like, straightening your back out.
Oh, stretch your body. Kind of, I thought you meant stretching the works, because that's also an issue.
Yeah.
And here, when I see some works, you know, there's immense powers in this material. Mm. Because the canvas is not designed to kind of uphold these dimensions. Mm. So there's a lot of weird forces. And even though I have this, these really thick wooden frames underneath, like a stretcher frame, it's still skewing because the fabric, you know, it wants to skew because the stitches are all diagonal. Mm. So it's the forces of nature.
Do you do anything like sort of steaming it or any of those kind of techniques to loosen
things
up a bit?
I damp it with water. So the big ones, I kind of make up as I go along how I stretch them. Mm-hmm. But now I made like a huge wooden frame that I drilled holes, and then I put small like wooden pegs so I can put that in the canvas holes and stretch it. Mm-hmm. And then I dampen it a lot. But that's really, I try new techniques every time. Smaller works are super easy, but the big ones, that's really, you know, I never know how it's going to end up.
Yeah, I don't know how much of a community of people there are that do needlepoints that are roughly 5 foot wide. Don't know how many other people there are to query, are there?
It's insane. You know, you've seen it sometimes when you leave the fabric as a background, but I never do that. So I always cover the whole thing. And I've never seen anyone do that in this scale. So I just have to make it up as I go along. Mm. That's a fun process, of course.
Thanks for joining me on another Needle Exchange. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to email hello@needle.exchange. That's NWDL.exchange with any thoughts, comments, or feedback. And if you want to keep up with all the news, sign up to the Needle Exchange mailing list at bit.ly/needleexchange. See you next time.